How's ministry going in your ward? Good or bad, I think we can help you improve it. If you text the word LEAD to 474747, you'll receive a link to our free PDF called 5 Steps in Getting Your Ward Ministering. Again, text the word LEAD to 474747 to get the free PDF or visit leadingsaints.org/PDF. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Leading Saints podcast. My name is Kurt Frankham, your host. Now, if you're new to Leading Saints, I welcome you. You're in the right place. You found the right resource, and I hope you benefit from it. We cover all sorts of topics, 300 plus episodes that I encourage you to peruse and find what would most help you. Now, you don't have to agree with every opinion on those podcasts or every perspective, but that's the beauty of it. We share different perspectives and see what we can learn from it. Now, in this episode, I'm excited to have another member, another therapist that's on our board of advisory. Let's see, I always say this wrong. Board of Therapist Advisors. I learned not too long ago that, you know what, we're covering some tough issues here, and I can't just act like I know what topics and subjects and how to speak to them would be because I have a marketing degree and I'm not a therapist. So I gathered a board of therapists who I can go to and say, here's a tough issue, where should we go? And then they lead and direct me. So Becky Hennessy is a member of that board of therapists, and she's also a stake in women's president, has a lot of great experience. I've known Becky a long time, and I have total trust in her ability as a therapist and her perspectives. And we talk about the dynamic of therapy versus coaching at the first of it. We kind of get in the weeds quick there. If you start falling asleep, just skip past it because there's some gems and pearls later on in this episode that you definitely need to hear. But coaching, you know, is becoming more trendy. And I think more and more leaders are sort of hearing that word crop up in their interactions that, oh, I have a coach or I have a life coach or I listen to this life coach. And, you know, we've had individuals like Jody Moore on before, who I highly recommend. She's doing fantastic work, but I think is becoming more and more in our culture as a thing. And so I think leaders need to better understand that. And then we go into different models of that as far as feelings and how to best approach an individual who comes into that office with a bucket full of feelings. Maybe it's trauma or something, some other intense experience they've had in their life, and they're going to go see their bishop or they're calling their Relief Society president, come over and talk about it. And that puts you in a tough spot. And so we want to give you some thoughts and ideas to reflect upon. It will help you be better prepared to lead. So nonetheless, you're going to enjoy it. Here's my interview with Becky Hennessy. Today, I'm in the office with Becky Hennessy. How are you?
I'm well.
You know, I want to always call you Becky Diggerness still. After all these years, I want to use your maiden name.
But I signed that on a check. Like, I mean, I've been married for 15 years. I think it was like 13 years deep. And I'm like, what is happening in my life right now?
You're not that Diggerness anymore.
Not anymore.
Right? So
she's still in there somewhere.
She is. She was very nice. So I've known Becky for a while, as we've talked about. And you've been on the podcast before, long ago.
Yeah.
And you were like afraid to hear your voice.
I mean, I didn't listen to it for like a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you are podcast extraordinaire. Podcaster extraordinaire, I should say.
Sure.
So put you into perspective. What's your background? You're a therapist. You're a member of our board of therapist advisors for Leading Saints. And but give us your background and plug your stuff.
Plug my stuff. So I have been a therapist since 2007, had a private practice since 2012, Bricks Family Counseling, and have just started to enter into the coaching world a little bit. So I can only do therapy in my state and I need to broaden.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Okay.
The Lord says. So I say, okay. I obey with exactness. And so therapy and coaching is a little bit different, but there's a lot that I can do in a coaching world.
And we'll go into that, but maybe describe what's your brand and your podcast and what's the point of it all.
Brand. So my podcast is The Path of Imperfection. And it's just kind of about all of the imperfect things that happen in our human experience and how to embrace that and be okay with the imperfection of it all. Mm-hmm. I think I am like 35, 36 episodes deep.
Nice. Very good.
Yeah.
And I may be appearing on one of these.
You're episode 35, my friend. That's you.
Nice.
Because 35 is big. It's a big deal.
Nice.
You're a pretty big deal.
All right. So people, tune in if you want to hear more of me. I mean, why wouldn't? After 300 episodes, what you need is another episode
of
me.
I'm like a rookie in the podcast world because you're...
You'll get there.
Yeah,
it happens before you know it.
So
maybe describe what the difference is between therapy and coaching.
Yeah. Okay.
Because so if you're a therapist, why don't you just therapy?
Yeah. And I do a lot, right? So what I've come to find is the difference is therapy involves a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So a coach is not going to give you a diagnosis. They shouldn't give you a diagnosis. If they are, that's shenanigans. Therapists.
And a diagnosis would be like OCD
or depression, like diagnosable depression, not just like, yes, you feel depressed, but like you have depression, right? Anxiety, PTSD, OCD, all that kind of stuff. Those are diagnoses. And a therapist can give that. A therapist has to go to school. They have to have like a master's degree, and then they have to take state tests, and then they have to become licensed. So that's therapy. And therapy focuses a lot on things that have happened in the past that are affecting your present and that could affect your future, like how you're going to show up in the present and the future. But it's a lot of delving into what was. Mm-hmm. Coaching is a little bit different. So coaching, you're not going to get a diagnosis. You shouldn't. If a coach is throwing out diagnoses, shame on them. Most of them don't. Coaching doesn't require schooling, but a lot of coaches do receive some kind of training, some kind of education.
Like a certification.
Yep. Yeah. And a lot of coaches, you know, the ones that are worth paying, have some kind of like a certification or something like that. They put in a lot of time and effort into becoming a coach like therapists do. It's just kind of a different space, and they're not really regulated. There's not really a license that they have to have. However, like I said, the coaches that are worth your time, your effort, your money are going to have something, right, to be helpful in that space. Yeah. So,
and so you can only create diagnoses or what do you give diagnoses in the state of Utah because that's where you're licensed.
Correct. Yeah. And so I would guess that a lot of coaches notice patterns and things like that and could say, ooh, I wonder if this person has depression or anxiety or whatever, and could encourage them to go see a therapist to receive that diagnosis or a doctor or something like that. But that's different. And coaches focus more on patterns and habits that are currently going on that are affecting your current, your present, and that could affect your future as well. So there's not a ton of delving into, you know, childhood stuff and past stuff. It's helpful. And sometimes they'll like peruse over that a little bit, but there's not really a ton of diving. It's more about what's going on right now and how can we level up? How can we do something to help some of those patterns and habits change so that it can be a different process for you now and in the future?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different.
Yeah. And so you're sort of branching out into the coaching arena because you want to help more people and not just your day-to-day clients that you come in. And so that may be people outside of Utah, which you will help and coach along, but you just can't come, even though you are a licensed therapist in Utah, you can't come to that, that diagnosis.
Sure. Yeah. And it's definitely God-driven. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have considered venturing into that.
This wasn't your dream, but no, but you're headed this way.
When Father says do, you say, okay, and you do after kicking and screaming and arguing with him for a minute.
And you're seeing some success and it's growing.
Yeah, so I do coach some folks here in the state of Utah as well. There are people that'll come in and they'll say, hey, I'm just struggling in these spaces or in these arenas. I don't really have a diagnosis. And as I visit with them, they don't really have a diagnosis. And then they fall under that coaching umbrella too. But yeah, I cannot practice therapy outside of the state that I'm licensed in. I'm only licensed here.
Nice. Now, and this whole concept of coaching, I think why I want to focus on this in an episode and talk more about it is, and maybe I'm just more aware of it, but it seems like coaching is becoming more and more trendy in the internet age as it becomes more and more dynamic, that more and more of these life coaches are popping up. You know, we've talked to Jody Moore before, which is very good at what she does and very famous. And then there's others, you'll run into people that say, yeah, I'm a life coach. And you think, wow, okay, what does that
even mean?
Yeah, what does that mean to do? And so I think it'd be helpful for leaders to understand, like you've described, the difference between that and then not only the difference of what a life coach is as opposed to a therapist, but also there's different approaches that some life coaches take as opposed to others. And from my, you know, lay perspective, it sort of seemed like all life coaches sort of follow the same model and approach that people like Jody Moore follow, which is great and helpful. But then you helped me understand, no, there's actually other models that life coaches follow and that work pretty well.
Yeah.
And the other thing I want to mention, and from your therapist standpoint, like sometimes an individual will come meet with a bishop or a Relief Society president will interact with somebody and they think, wow, they're going through a difficult time that it doesn't seem like they can untangle the mess of their life on their own. Mm-hmm. And so we sort of default to, well, they probably need a therapist. And mm-hmm. I give the experience of my wife where she's had some bouts of depression and things, nothing that's super chronic or intense. And we've talked about it and she's found a lot of help, not necessarily going to a therapist, or she'd go to a therapist and it was like way intense. And she was just like, it just seems like overkill. But then she became more familiar with a life coach and that she found a sweet spot there, right?
Yeah, that was her arena. That was her space.
And so not that a bishop or a leader would promote a specific life coach, but just to know that, you know, maybe to encourage someone, maybe you could look into a life coach and see if that helps, right?
Yeah.
And obviously a leader pays for therapy all the time. I'm not saying that they should pay for a life coach, but it may be a venue if the individual can afford it, or there's a lot of free resources that life coaches put out that they can send them down that way. And over the weeks of them in that realm, they may see, oh, this person seems more stable and progress is happening, right?
Yeah. And I think the beauty of that is that our bishops, our leaders have the Spirit with them, and they know, like, the Spirit can tell them that. The Spirit can confirm to them. Any therapist can be a coach. Like, there's a significant difference in some of the things, but therapists can do the same thing, you know, coaches can do. Coaches can do the same things therapists can do, except for the diagnosis piece and all those kinds of things. So I think it's important, like, that the bishop just pay close attention to that. It'd be a bummer if the bishop was like, oh, you know, this, like, read these coaching articles and it could help you. And someone was like suffering from depression or betrayal trauma or something where they could really use therapy. And they're like, and so my bishop told me to go to a coach. And there that is, right? Yeah. But like, similarly, it would be really unfortunate for a bishop to be like, oh, sister, I think you've got some significant depression. Let's have you go to a therapist. And then they go and they're like, yeah, life's hard, but it's more situational, or it's every now and again, it's not as heavy. And here's this, you know, therapist drowning them in all of these things. That's like, that's not a fit for me. So, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So anything else I want to move on to maybe these different models that are out there, but anything we haven't discussed in the realm of like coaches versus therapists?
No, it's funny. I'm finding that a lot of folks don't really, particularly women, I don't know, don't really want to like invest in themselves necessarily, not just money-wise, but time-wise. And so sometimes it's tricky because there's a lot of folks that really could benefit from like a coaching experience or something like that. And they just figure, I'm just going to read this or do this and not have a guide kind of guide me through that. And that's heartbreaking because it could be a really cool thing. And it's a different space. You know, there's folks that I'll talk with, gentlemen that I'll talk with, that will say, well, I don't need therapy. Like, I've got this and this and this. I don't need therapy. And then, but these are folks that have like executive coaching. They get coaching career-wise. They get coaching otherwise. And they have mentors and things like that, but they don't see how that could be helpful in their personal mental health space. To me, I just kind of compare it to like a mental health gym membership, because you just, you know, pay like a subscription service like what I have, or, you know, whatever. And then it's kind of a gym membership for your mental health. And it's just as important. And I don't know if it's just here in Utah or
that could be the case. That's happened before.
But there's a lot of folks that don't necessarily understand the value of that until they start doing that. What I'm finding is that it's more and more trendy. And I don't know if it's like because it's a millennial thing or whatever, but it definitely is significantly helpful. And more and more you're hearing people, you know, it used to be that everybody had a therapist, like everybody would, when I went to therapy. And now you're hearing more and more, like everybody has a coach, everybody has a mentor or somebody like that.
Yeah, that's interesting because there's a lot of stigma around going to a therapist, right? And which is unfortunate. Hopefully that stigma is diminishing, but you may have an individual working with you think, wow, they need some therapy. Like, I've seen this case before. And then maybe they push that off, or that, no, there's nothing wrong with me. I don't need therapy. Well, you know, what about a life coach? You know, have you looked that way? And the other thing about life coaching is that a lot of time, like you mentioned, you have programs where people may pay just a small monthly fee. And then it's more of like, I don't have to meet in a room with somebody and talk about my problems, but I can sort of be on the outside and listen to somebody else's coaching session and gain from that and apply some things that were talked about, even though they're not talking about me specifically. Right.
Yeah. And that's the space that I'm in, right? So I have a website, BeckyHennessy.com. I had to think about it for a second.
Not Becky Diggerness, Becky Hennessy.
So it's BeckyIe and then Hennessy.com. And that's exactly what it is. It's a subscription service. They pay a monthly fee. And then there's a certain number of coachings that happen a month. Some of them are live coachings where they can come in and I'll coach them, but a community can just kind of watch. Sometimes it's like a Q&A, and sometimes it's more seminar like where I'm just kind of downloading all the information out of my brain. But it's a cool experience and they don't necessarily have to sit in an office. If you're seeing a life coach and there's a need for therapy, if they're good, then they're going to say, hey, you probably need to go see a therapist, because there are definitely things that fall under a therapy umbrella. Addiction falls under a therapy umbrella. Yeah. Don't get a coach if you have an addiction. Get yourself a therapist. Mm-hmm. If you've got some trauma, betrayal trauma or childhood trauma or whatever, you need to get yourself a therapist. Yeah. Like that kind of stuff needs to be worked out with therapy.
And a good life coach will point that out, hopefully, right?
Yes, absolutely. And they are, and they're amazing. Like I, you know, have folks that will refer to me as a therapist, as coaches, and there's folks that I can refer to sometimes as coaches if I'm the therapist. I don't double dip. So I'm not somebody's therapist and their coach and vice versa. And so it's, a good one's going to steer you in the right direction. But
yeah, nice. So let's talk about the different models. Like I had the opportunity to interview Jody Moore, which, and I'm a fan of Jody Moore. I listen to her podcast every week.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of Latter-day Saint women that are familiar with Jody Moore.
Yeah.
And she, maybe talk about the model she has and maybe the difference with the model you have. But, and you're not saying one's better than the other. It's just sort of,
different.
This is your wheelhouse and it's different for one person. And that's another thing is somebody may go to you as a coach and think, that didn't work, and go to Jody Moore and think, wow, this one is really fit for me. So Jody Moore talks about the CBT model. Maybe describe that and then introduce the ACT model that you work from.
Okay. So the CBT model is cognitive behavioral training if you're a coach, cognitive behavioral therapy if you're a therapist. I've listened to some of Jody's podcast and find him to be super helpful. I know she's changed, like legit changed people's lives, which I think is amazing.
It's inspiring.
And phenomenal. So I'm just going to explain CBT.
Yeah.
Go back and listen to the episode that Jody talks about to know like her take, right? Like for people. So cognitive behavioral training or cognitive behavioral therapy is this idea that the thought comes before the feeling that comes before the action. So it's this idea that if you can alter the thinking, feelings are going to change, and then actions are going to change in a nutshell.
Right.
Now, I know people are going to hear this. They're going to be like, oh my gosh. And they're going to leave all kinds of comments because they're going to be like, Becky, you completely botched that.
Yeah.
But in a nutshell, that's the idea. It's this, okay, we can be in control of our thoughts, which means then we can control how we feel, which means then we can control our behavior.
Yeah. And so if I'm in a, you know, obviously I'm in a relationship with my wife and I am frustrated with her and we're in this fight and you know, it leads to me taking action of saying things that I would maybe later regret. Mm-hmm. I can then think about, well, what are the feelings that caused that? And then what thoughts caused that? And then I can assess, rather than assessing, oh, I'm not going to say that next time. I'm now assessing, well, maybe I could think differently because that thinking is leading to a dangerous spot for my relationship, right? And so, and there may be a thought that was created from something that she did and that created a thought when in reality, that wasn't, her action didn't mean to create that thought in my mind, right?
Right.
But it led to an action that I later regret.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Is that good?
That was that's a good so example. Much better than me. That was great. Are you interested in therapy?
Right.
Not you getting it, but you doing it. Well, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
So then how does that maybe go through the ACT model? How does it compare to the ACT model?
Yeah. So ACT stands for Acceptance Commitment Therapy or Acceptance Commitment Training. Mm-hmm. And I'm a newbie. Like I've only started to really explore ACT Act, whatever you want to call it, for like the last 4 years-ish, maybe 5 years-ish, because I started to notice a dissonance. So dissonance is a fancy word for saying a gap in between what you know and what's going on or what you want to do and what's really happening or whatever. There's like this gap. And so for me, as I entered into going to graduate school and learning about how to do therapy and all that kind of stuff, I loved the idea of CBT. Absolutely loved it. Bought it hook, line, and sinker because I'm what you would call a control freak. And I loved the idea of wow, I have a lot of say then. I can choose how I think, which means I can choose how I feel, which means I can choose what happens. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
At least how I respond to what happens, I can control that. And so for me, I thought that's a fit. That's a fit for me. That's a fit for how I'm going to parent. That's a fit for how I'm going to show up in a relationship. That's a fit for how I'm going to practice in my office. And so CBT was my jam for quite a while. What was difficult was I started to notice a gap because some folks that would work really, really well with, and some folks it wouldn't work well with. And one of those folks was me. So as I started to try to like control the heck out of all my thinking and lock that up and have it be a certain way, I started to notice that regardless, even if I was on my game, I was visualizing things, I was showing up in a different space, I was affirmationing like crazy, I was doing all of that, I started to notice that difficult feelings would still happen pretty consistently. Mm-hmm. And that didn't make a ton of sense to me. And then I started to notice with clients that I was working with, some really did well with the thoughts, feelings, behaviors, right? And some would try and try and try and try, and it just wasn't clicking and it just wasn't working. And so I started to get really, really curious about what that was about. For me, I started to notice as I was raising my kids, like no matter how I talked to them, no matter what I taught them, no matter, like there would still be some really hard feelings that would go on that couldn't be remedied mm-hmm. with that mode, right? And so as I started to get curious, I looked more into this idea of this ACT model and noticed that for me, that was a much better fit for me as a person, for how I did my kids, for clients, that was actually more successful in moving towards having things change than that. So because I'm a newbie at this, I am not an expert. Here's a really, really watered down version of what this is all about. So essentially, it's this idea that we be open to the feelings, so particularly the hard ones, and we actively choose how we're going to respond to them. So it's this idea that feelings happen. And as that feeling happens, then there's an acceptance that this feeling is going on. So acceptance doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to accept all the difficult things as truth, and that's how it is, and you just have to put up with it for the rest of your life. It's more that you become aware of the feeling being present. You acknowledge that feeling. You notice them. You notice how it feels in your body. You notice patterns about that. And then you commit to how you're going to respond to that according to your value system, according to what's important to you, and according to what you believe. So it's a much more fluid process, and there's this level of vulnerability and this level of acceptance that happens of like, oh, this feeling is coming up and I get to choose what thoughts I'm going to have about the feeling. I get to choose how I'm going to behave to the feeling according to like my own value system. That's a really watered down version. Y'all Google it.
Okay.
And you'll...
So give us an example, like a scenario where this may happen.
Okay. So one that I use quite a bit is... Like, let's say that you have a puppy who's your like family's dog and you absolutely love it, right? And the puppy runs out in the road and gets hit. Hopefully I'm not like bringing up trauma for anybody who's hearing this. Pause it, go to your place, come back. So let's say you have a dog, it gets hit, dog dies. Okay. You're going to feel a feeling, whatever that feeling is. Like the majority of folks are going to feel heartbroken, sad. There might be some guilt, like maybe we didn't put the dog away, whatever. There's going to be some feelings that happen. You're going to have a body response to that situation. And that's all that feelings are. Feelings are, and emotions are just, they're just a body response to whatever goes on. You didn't choose that feeling and you didn't think, I think I'm going to feel really sad. And it wasn't like, oh, now my dog is dead and now I'm not going to get to play with my dog. And then there's this and this, and then you feel sad. Like you run out of the house and the feeling happens,
yeah.
Right? Then you get to decide what to do with that feeling. You get to decide how you're going to respond to that feeling. That feeling isn't who you are. That feeling's just a feeling, right? And you get to decide how to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yeah.
So for me, I practice a version of ACT where I know that the feeling's coming. There's an acceptance of the feeling of, oh, this is here, this is present. And then I can decide how I'm going to think about it. I decide how I'm going to respond to it. And then it goes into like what I do. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I think especially when trauma, I mean, obviously that's a very traumatic experience where, you know, suddenly this beloved dog is dead and squashed on the street.
Yeah.
What about in the day-to-day, like maybe in a relationship example, what does it look like? That obviously sometimes the spouse does something that they think, oh, like, I can't believe she did that.
Sure.
You know, she's harming me or...
Yeah. I'll just be real. I'll give you one of my like most recents, right? So my husband is a realtor. His name's Jason Hennessy. It's a nice little
there.
Plug.
If you're in the Utah area.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he is.
It's about relationships, not money for him. So little plug. So up till now, he has worked Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, like all day, every day, worked like crazy. Now that he is a full-time realtor, he's home more often. So for the first time that I can remember in my married life, I was introduced to March Madness this past week.
Did you got your bracket filled out, Becky?
No, because I'm anti-bracket right now, but all my kids have one. Uh-huh. And my husband has one. So apparently this is a thing. I was unaware of what a thing it is. It's a thing for a whole couple weekends. And it's madness at the Hennessy house. So I worked most of the day on Thursday. And I'm like super excited to come home and just spend time with my kids and my husband.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. So, and I'm not like planning like, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. But I'm just thinking like, that's going to be awesome to go home and just be. Uh-huh. Be great. I legit walk into my house and there's like screaming happening, cheering, like it was madness. I get why they call it what they call it. And I'm like, what is happening right now? And my husband's like, it's March Madness. And I'm like, oh, what is that even? What is that?
Because usually he was watching it in a different office, but now he's home.
Well, he doesn't even get to watch it usually. He just gets the highlights of it. And so he's like, oh, so-and-so lost. And I'm like, yeah, that sucks. And then... we move on and it's fine. So as I walk into the house and this is going on, I have like disappointed feelings. Yeah. I can feel disappointment in my body.
Because you had a certain expectation.
Yes.
Walking
in. And I know that my night's not going to go how I want it to. Now I have a whole podcast episode about expectations and agreements. So any of my podcast listeners who are listening are like, Becky, you really should have had an agreement. And let me tell you what, if I knew March Madness was a thing, I would have had an agreement. I was unaware. Now I know for next year. Anyway, so I have feelings of disappointment. Did I choose to have feelings of disappointment? No. Did a thought enter into my head before that disappointment did? No. That disappointment was in my body first, and I felt it. And then I got to figure out what I was going to do with that disappointment, right?
Yeah.
Am I going to brood and go in my room and lock myself away and...
Cry
or read a book or something and not have anything to do with them and just be frustrated? Sure, I could do that. Am I going to... join the madness? Sure, I could do that. Am I going to sit down and say, hey, babe, this is what I was thinking would happen today. And this is, sure, there's a lot of different ways that I can respond to that. And there's a lot of different thoughts I can have about that, right? But that comes after the feeling. Uh-huh. So that's kind of how it shows up. Like in a mom space, this is when your kids are a flipping hot mess and you're like, what is going on in my life right now? Like what? And you feel overwhelmed or you feel stressed or you feel whatever. And it's not because you don't love them. And it's not because you're a terrible mother or you're thinking awful things about your kids. It's because your body is having a body experience of madness, of overwhelm, of whatever. So that feeling pops in first and then the thoughts come in and then you get to decide what to do with them.
Yeah. Because in the typical scenario, without anybody being conscious of these feelings and your response to them, is that the feelings and circumstances drive your life, right? And you don't even realize it's happening.
Yeah.
You walk in there with certain expectations. Now you're upset.
Yep.
Maybe a silent treatment follows or yelling follows, you know, fight or flight. And then the whole situation, then that's just one more
brick
to the destruction of your marriage and relationship, right? And so it's almost just that you recognize the feeling that you felt, grab the wheel, and then steer from there and control how you're going to respond.
Yeah, you have that feeling inside of your body. Now, thoughts can definitely feed feelings. So the feeling is like this little... something, I don't know, gremlin, whatever you want to call it, right? Uh-huh. And as soon as you have a thought, as soon as you enter out of that space of, oh, this is a feeling, this is how I'm feeling it in my body, this is what's going on, this is just a feeling, you can feed that with thought and the thought can cultivate a bigger feeling or grow the feeling or whatever. That can definitely happen. But typically that feeling pops in there first, and then you get to decide what to do with it. And sometimes it gets big enough that you're like, oh, this needs to be handled or dealt with or whatever. Yeah. Anyway.
And so are there certain, and maybe this is for a whole different, another conversation, or, but as far as tactics and strategies in those moments to take control, is it because I can see it's easy to just be like, okay, my expectations destroyed and I'll just smile a lot and yeah. I'm going to act
I'll
like,
fake it till
I'm
going to
act
it.
Like I love basketball. But yeah. That's, you're sort of just faking it.
Yeah. 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 Like the technique and tactic that I talk about, and I talk about this a ton on the Dot to Dot Project, which is my subscription service, right? Is to just be really aware of what's going on with your body. Mm-hmm. Like to be really clear of what's going on with your body. So when the feeling comes in, it's like, okay, how does my stomach feel? How does my chest feel? How does my head feel? That's typically where those feelings show up, right? Or how, you know, how inside of my body, how is this all feeling? And that's like the first go to start to figure out, okay, let me take the wheel back. Let me figure out what I'm going to do about that and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So Tony Overbay, who I know you've interviewed before,
is an amazing
man, amazing podcast. He's interviewed.
The virtual couch.
Yeah. He's interviewed Jody Moore, amazing interview with Jody Moore on that podcast. So he talks a lot about the ACT model.
That's sort of his approach to
his jam. Yeah. Uh-huh, he's coaching. Way more of an expert on it than I am because I'm a newbie. I just barely showed up at the game, but he's been playing the game for a while. Uh-huh. So he gives a lot of meat to that as well, which is really cool.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, we recommend listening and we'll put some of those in the show notes where he talks with Jody Moore, where she has that CBT approach.
Yeah.
And these aren't like competing models.
No.
It's
because there's some folks that will show up at the Dot to Dot Project and I'll be working with them and they'll be like, this is not my jam. Like, mm-hmm. I cannot get this to fit and I cannot get this to work. I get to think, you know what? There's an amazing individual out there named Jody who is incredible and who will rock your world. Mm-hmm. Like, she's got some awesome stuff to offer to you. Try this on instead, which is totally cool and neat that there are different approaches and there's different models that can fit for every person that can be a little bit different. Yeah.
And it may not even be the model, it may just be the coach, right? That you can maybe try the same model, but with a different coach or a different model with the same coach or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's put this in the church leader context.
Yeah.
That again, not that one thing I want to be super clear, the podcast over and over again is we're not trying to train leaders to be a therapist by any means or to train them to even be a life coach.
Right.
But if you're just aware of some of these models and how they approach, you know, how therapists are approaching them, how life coaches are approaching them, you can maybe start seeing some patterns in the bishop's office and that sort of thing. So in the context of, you know, church leader patterns and things, where do we start there?
Yeah. So we'll go there. First, I want you to know as a church leader, you don't get to judge your then self with your now knowledge. So we're going to talk about a couple of different things here. You're going to explore a couple of different things and it's going to be absolutely like, hopefully it's amazing and great.
This is where I just am brought to tears because I'm like, oh no, like I made all those mistakes as a bishop,
you know?
Like,
right. So just know, I'm telling you that you did the absolute best that you can. You've done the absolute best you can, period.
Yeah.
Like with the knowledge that you've had and everything. So if you hear new things here today and you're like, oh crap, my interview last, can I say crap on your podcast? I don't know if I can say that.
Maybe you should try that again.
Oh darn. I talked to sister so-and-so and I did all those patterns and talking with her and now she's going to throw the church in the garbage and never come back. Like don't judge your then self with your now knowledge. That's my like side note. So here's what I've noticed. When folks come in, typically in a therapy space, sometimes in a coaching space, they talk about some different responses from church leaders. And this just isn't just bishops. This could be Relief Society presidents or presidency members, young women's leaders, primary leaders, whatever, young men's leaders. So a lot of times they come in and they're like, my leader knocked it out of the park. They were amazing. They were incredibly empathetic. They were compassionate. They said this, this, and this. It was exactly what I needed to hear. I feel super supported and super encouraged by my leader. That happens quite a bit. That happens often with folks, right? There are times where folks come in and they say, it was a dumpster fire. It did not work out well at all. And what I've noticed is there are three particular patterns that happen in the dumpster fires that keep showing up over and over and over. And for me, it's further confirmation like, okay, you're onto something with this whole act thing. So pattern one is this idea that we get to choose how we feel. We don't. There are particular stores and retail places that sell things that say choose happy. And I just like have to hand to the heavens, ask for strength to not like rip the pillow to shreds. Joy is different. Joy is a state of mind. We can choose joy. Happy is a feeling. And if we could choose happy, wouldn't every single person...
We'd stay there, right?
On this all the time.
Yeah.
Every single minute of every single day. It's not the human experience. We can't always reside in happy, right? So
it's not part of like speaking spiritually. It's not part of the greater plan,
no.
right? Of that we weren't sit here to always be happy. It was
right.
It's how we grow sometimes in the dark places,
yeah.
right?
Which is why I love the plan of salvation, mm-hmm. right? Or the plan of I call it the plan of imperfection, plan of mistakes, uh-huh. or whatever, right? Because we can't choose happy. So this idea that we get to choose how we feel shows up. Sometimes in a bishop's office or talking with a Relief Society president or talking with the young women's leader. And at the end of the day, we don't get to pick how we feel. So I compare feelings to toddlers. Some, very few, are awesome and a blast to hang out with. And they're just amazing. And you're like, I could take pictures of these all day. And it's phenomenal. Most, bless their ever living hearts, they're just little trolls. And it's not awesome. Uh-huh. And it's really, really hard. And they continue to bug you until you pay attention to them. Like, it's like, mama, 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 mama. And you're like, what? And then it's whatever. Uh-huh. Look at me. And they jump off the fireplace or whatever, right? And so feelings are like toddlers. Like, they don't go away until you acknowledge them. And again, we don't get to pick how we feel. So when somebody goes into a bishop's office and they sit down and they're like, Bishop, I'm really feeling blah, 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 blah. And they hear, well, sister, just choose to not. Mm-hmm. Just choose to wake up every morning and make a decision that you're going to be happy that day. That sister inside is like, are you flipping kidding me? Like, I've tried that for 3 years and it's not great. Or the sister's like, okay, Bishop, I'll do that better. I'll do that harder. And I just haven't been trying hard enough. So
I've heard it in the context of when forgiveness is needed, like maybe the spouse has hurt them, you know, and you need to choose forgiveness because that's what we were commanded to do, right? And but which on paper I get it, but that process that feeling of betrayal, that feeling of trauma needs to be addressed before that feeling can just dissipate.
Yeah, and that takes us to our next one, right? So this other pattern is change your thinking and then your feelings are going to change. So it's like, girl, you just need, and I'm sure bishops are not saying girl, but it's just like, sister, you just need to decide.
Yeah.
Just choose this and then you'll feel this. And it's not incredibly helpful all the time. Now, there are some folks that will really resonate with. Great. Those are your CBT folks and that can really be helpful. But the sister who's coming to you because she just found out that her husband has a pornography addiction. And not everybody who looks at pornography has an addiction, just a side note. But like, let's say that this sister comes and she says, you know, my husband has this pornography addiction and she's coming to you. Or the brother that's coming to you because he just lost his job. Or that ward member that's coming to you because they have some confusion about maybe some core church history or whatever. They're coming to you with a bucket of feelings. And if those feelings aren't paid attention to first, if all that's focused on is the thought about those feelings, they're going to walk away feeling unheard. And they're going to walk away feeling like empathy wasn't there. And they're going to walk away feeling like compassion wasn't even there. They're going to feel hopeless and those kinds of things. So it's really important to just be able to pay attention to feelings. And it doesn't have to get bonkers. You're not a therapist. You're not a coach, whatever. It doesn't have to be this huge. It's just acknowledging that those feelings are there and that those feelings are hard. And giving some space for that and giving some acceptance of, we've got some feelings and they're hard.
I like that visual of having a bucket of feelings. You know, people can walk in that office with such a heavy bucket and there's feelings there. And sometimes as leaders, we feel like, well, what our mission is so that they walk out of here with an empty bucket, right?
Yeah, no.
But that's just not going to be the case. And so sometimes we bring the bucket, they bring in the bucket of feelings and we think, okay, well, let's just have you dump that out and move on your way. you know, give that to Christ and, and get back to life, you know, cheer up, brother. But really the best mode is to, with a heart full of empathy, to point at each one of those feelings and say, wow, like, tell me about that one.
Yeah. It's just acknowledging the bucket. There's a bucket here. Huh. There's a bucket. And these are the feelings that are in the bucket. You don't have to take the bucket from them. You don't have to dump it out all over the place.
And really our goal would be for them to leave the office, most likely still carrying that bucket, but with a whole lot more hope.
Yeah.
That, you know, this is okay.
My bishop sees my bucket.
Yeah, he sees my bucket.
Sure.
Acknowledge the bucket. Right?
Yeah. So pattern number three is this idea of faking it till you make it. And this is a hard one. This has been a hard one for me to rumble with because I'm a huge fan. Like, I'm a huge fan of the law of attraction. I'm a huge fan of visualization. Faking it till you make it is not any of that. Fake it till you make it runs the risk of a couple different things. So if someone is sitting there on the couch and the Relief Society president is explaining to the sweet sister, like, you just have to pretend like it's okay, basically, is what fake it till you make it is. Like, well, you know, just wake up every morning and have a smile on your face. And if you can't make a smile, then bite a pen and that'll turn the corners up on your mouth. And then you'll have a smile and just walk around with the pen in your mouth all day. And then you'll feel 10 times better. Like, there is some science to, you know, smiling and the feelings that can bring and all those kinds of things. However, you run a couple risks. One, you run a risk of being a poser. Now, I know my husband went to this Warrior Heart boot camp. It was life-changing, absolutely amazing. And he came home and he explained, like, being a poser to me really well. Can you explain? I know you've been to it. Can you explain what being a poser is?
Typically, it's one of those things where, and men are really good at it because we don't want to acknowledge our weaknesses or the trauma in our life or the wounds. And so we'll just cover it up. You know, we'll just get to work and, you know, be tough. You know, you don't need no reason to acknowledge that, you know. So I'm going to show up to church and I'm just going to be the super ministering brother. I'm going to magnify my calling in the hope that the more I magnify my calling, the more that trauma and that weakness in me will just be covered up and we don't need to address it. Right. And it's very, I am the president of the poser club. I mean, this is something I struggle with so much, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so subtle. And so, but it is a thing.
Yeah, it is a thing. And it's really, it's this idea, right, of faking it till you make it. Like, because the intention isn't like, I'm going to snow all of these people and make them believe I'm something I'm not. Right, the intention is, if I do this, then this will happen, which is how our commandments are written. Mm-hmm. If you do this, then this will happen. And so the intention is to do that. Ladies show up in the same space a lot of times, right? If I just do X, Y, and Z and serve in this way and this way and this way, then this will happen and then this will be. So this idea of like posing and faking it till you make it, or this candy coat of like, life is awesome.
Yeah.
How are you? I am so good. And you're like, sister, your house burned down last week. I know. Aren't we blessed that we, I don't.
Right.
So it's this idea of like this candy coating or posing or even like pretending and just white knuckling while you're pretending.
Right.
Like, I know it's supposed to be this way, so I'm going to fake it and I'm just going to like have this pain while I'm faking it. Like all of those kinds of things, that creates a really, really hard space for folks who are dealing with really, really hard feelings.
Yeah. Let me give you another example of where it happens so subtly, because I don't think most bishops listening to this or leaders are not going to be like, well, just smile more or these things. You know, we're sort of using these examples. But sometimes when we approach situations, you know, someone brings in their bucket full of feelings because of something that happened or things are going through, we think there's sort of this, they're looking to us for advice.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we don't know what to say. I can share some scriptures, whatever. So we sometimes default to, well, what I want you to do is, let's just really make an emphasis on you reading your scriptures every day.
Yeah.
Which, again, I'm not saying the bishop shouldn't suggest they read their scriptures, but when we use those tactics in order to fix something or to empty the bucket, that's where it becomes, you put them in a dangerous spot because they think, oh, bishop, I am reading my scriptures every day. My bucket is still full. And so they go home and they think, okay, I'm going to read double the time.
Yeah.
And wow, my bucket's still full because we're not addressing the feelings. We're just trying to fake it till we make it or put something pose enough until the wound is healed. But only Christ can heal the wound.
Right.
And sometimes, a lot of times, people need professional help to address the feelings so that they can reach Christ.
Yeah.
We know he can reach us, but sometimes we don't reach out to him to fix the wound.
And that can be that therapy umbrella, right? And the thing is, like, praying and reading your scriptures isn't necessarily going to be life changing. Like, you're not going to have this life changing event because you pray and read your scriptures all the time. Mm-hmm. However, praying and reading your scriptures can put the Spirit in your life that can then have that life changing event.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's helpful information to give. It's definitely not going to make it go away or fix it, and shows up in that, yeah, fake it till you make it. So as far as the patterns go, it's the patterns of you choose how you feel, think this, and then you'll feel this, or fake it till you make it. And again, that goes across all kinds of leadership. That's not just with bishops or presidents of organizations or whatever. That can go across all the spans, where those are the patterns that I'm consistently seeing that show up when it doesn't go well. Most of the time it does go well, because bishops are amazing people and they do amazing things for people. And presidents of organizations are listening to the Spirit, and the Spirit is telling them what to say. When it doesn't go well, that's what I'm noticing.
Yeah.
So those three things. And again, it's not, some of them see sort of blatant and like, oh, of course I would never do that. But they come so subtly, just like that scripture example, that you begin using some of these. We'll keep the commandments as a tool to fix something, but that's not what they're there for. They're a tool. Christ fixes us. Those are tools to sanctify us right through the atonement. And so it's sometimes it's easy to get those mixed up. So worth just pondering over. I think leaders listening to that, to just sit with those a while and think, okay, you know, think about different interactions you have with people, and then say, you know, what am I doing there? Am I sort of subtly asking them to fake it till they make it? Or am I saying, wow, with a heart full of empathy, you got a bucket full of feelings.
Sure.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. And I would guess that, I know for me, because I listen to your podcast religiously, That makes it sound like worship.
This is not a religion,
people. No, but I listen to it pretty faithfully, right? Yeah. And this comes the point where I'm like, hey, now what do I do? Like, I get it. You've given me all the theory behind it and the principles behind it. Like, okay, I'll sit at the table for a minute and play with this idea. Now what do I do, right? And so as we start to go into that space of this is what you do with that, this is like legit my most unfavorite part of stuff, is it has to start with you. Because I love to like hear a principle or a tactic or whatever, and I think, sweet. So currently I'm serving as the Stake Young Women's president in our stake, right? And so I'll listen to an episode that you've got or whatever, and I'll be like, my presidents need to hear this, and they need to apply these things, and I'll like forward it on to them or whatever. But really what needs to happen is I need to be like, where do I need this? And where do I need to use this in my presidency, right? So it has to start with you. And that goes along with the scripture that we find in Matt 22:39, which says to, you know, love your neighbor. And then it's that like, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. As thyself infers that you're already doing that with you. Right? Yeah. It doesn't then be like, so this is how you do that for yourself per se. It's saying, hey, you do you, and then you can do others, right? So this idea of starting with yourself would be, then that means that you need to start to acknowledge your feelings as the church leader. You need to start to acknowledge what comes up for you in whatever space, right? So what are the feelings that happen inside of your body when sister so-and-so calls, or brother so-and-so calls, or you see sister so-and-so's texts? What's the experience that's happening inside of your body, and paying attention to that, not being like, oh, I can't believe I'm feeling that. I need to stop feeling. Just pay attention. Notice those feelings that are coming up for you. What are the feelings that you have when a person says no to that primary calling, or when the bishop comes to you and says, hey, that's not going to work. Sister so-and-so can't be in that space. Pick somebody else. What are the feelings that are happening in your body? What are the feelings that happen when a bishop asks you to do just one more thing as a young woman's president or as a young men's president, right? So you've got to acknowledge those feelings and validate them and pay attention to what's going on with you, because you might be feeling shame. You might be feeling inadequate. You might be feeling like a failure. You might be feeling like an imposter. Be aware if you're feeling that shame, or if you're feeling that inadequacy, or whatever. Be aware of how interactions create that, right? Or how conversations or relationships are showing up for you. Being really aware of yourself in that space is tricky, because we tell ourselves we're not supposed to feel that way. We say, if we're true disciples of Jesus Christ, then we won't feel annoyed. We won't feel overwhelmed. We won't feel frustrated. We get these callings that require these superpowers, and we're just human. And so we tell ourselves over and over and over, like, well, we need to show up more Christ-like and we need to show up differently. Christ felt some hard feels. Like if you really look at the life of Christ, he absolutely felt some hard things as well, you know? And so it's okay to feel those feels. Your feelings are not you. So just because you feel annoyed, just because you feel frustrated, just because you feel resentment, or just because you feel overwhelmed, doesn't mean you are that. It just means that you're feeling that. And so paying attention to those things are really important. And ignoring them just makes them louder and just makes them bigger. And they are going to overflow into spaces you don't want them to. You're going to be frustrated with sister so-and-so. And then you're going to have a conversation with your wife and something's going to come out and she's going to be like, where did that come from? And it has nothing to do with her.
Yeah.
So acknowledging that and paying attention to that and noticing that is a huge step for leaders. And then also saying, okay, this is what's going on for me. Getting curious about that. What's that all about? And then making some commitments about what you're going to do about it.
Yeah.
It gets to start with you.
Yeah. That's powerful because, you know, we talk about individuals bringing their bucket of feelings to the bishop's office, but we need to acknowledge that before the bishop even starts his appointments for that night, he brought his own bucket of feelings into that office, right? That he's maybe unsure of how to process or deal with, or right? And sometimes we want to be that poser feeling like, no, like, let's just act like I don't have this bucket of feelings because I'm the bishop, right? And I'm good. And I remember those tough days where something at work went bad and I'm just frustrated with that, but it's Tuesday and I got appointments at the church. And so I got to go talk to people about their problems.
Right.
And that sometimes my problems would just hang on me like, okay, I get it. Your life sounds really bad. If you could hear my life, you would be.
It gets so, you're like, you're worried about that. Well, let me tell you about this. Yeah.
And so I think just the self-care, acknowledging that you have a bucket too, and that's okay.
Totally fine. Cause you're human.
Right.
Yeah.
And that especially, we're not saying every bishop needs to go to a therapist or get a life coach, but
although y'all could probably use one.
Right.
I mean,
especially by year 4 or 5.
Right.
Yeah. But nonetheless, just acknowledging it and making sure that you have healthy practice in your life, that you are processing and handling those feelings.
Yeah. So some of that self-care and some of that healthy processing is having self-empathy and having self-compassion, right? So empathy and compassion are different things. They hang out together, but they're different. Empathy is the feeling. Compassion is the doing. So compassion is the action. Empathy is this like feeling with, right? So if it's self-empathy, you're feeling with yourself or allowing Christ to sit there with you in that feeling. It's that self-empathy of like, wow, that's hard and that's okay. Like, this is a really difficult thing because I'm human. It's that. And then the self-compassion is what do you do about that? So for me, when I consider self-compassion, I think, okay, what would I say or how would I treat a good friend? Am I bringing me the same bucket, right? If I have a friend call me and she's like, I'm the worst mom ever because I yelled at my kid because they did blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to be like, girl, you are the worst mom ever. I cannot believe what you have done. I'm going to empathize with her. And then I'm going to say something like, let me bring you dinner tonight, or have your kids come my way, or let's have a play date, or let, right? And so that self-compassion gets to be, what would I do for myself? So I've heard it because I work with a ton of bishops, not in therapy, but as like I'm working with their ward members.
Even though they've referred people to you.
Yep, bishops do get therapy. But as I've worked with them, they're encouraging their ward members, like, take her on a date. Put your phone away. Don't worry about this, that, and the other, and do this and this and this. And that's some compassion right there, right? Mm-hmm. That's allowing people to be human. Bishops need to be doing the same thing. Presidents of organizations need to be doing the same thing. So it's that part of that self-care is having that self-empathy, which you probably rock at for other people, but you get to turn it inward, and having that self-compassion. Christ did it for himself too. Like, he didn't walk around holding his stomach because of how hungry he was and all the, like, Christ ate and Christ slept and Christ hung out with his friends, and Christ was in a space where he had that empathy too for himself, and he had that self-compassion for himself. So that's a huge part of that self-care. And then another thing to consider as well is you have guinea pigs in your house. Like, you can practice all of this stuff. You can practice the empathizing and the compassion. You can practice the acknowledgement of the feeling and then deciding what you're going to do about that feeling with your wife or with your husband or with your kids. And you can start, not like, okay, I'm going to pretend like your sister so-and-so and I'm the bishop and we're going to role play, but you have a family that is human. Yeah. And so use this stuff with them. It's like my dad was a mechanic, and it's the whole like the plumber's toilets never working, uh-huh. right? Like the mechanic. So like you give all of this stuff to other folks, and sometimes our families get the bottom of the barrel, and I get it because I'm serving in a leadership calling, right? And there are times where I'll go above and beyond to make sure that this activity is incredible, and my kids get Little Caesars because I didn't have time to make dinner, right? Or whatever, which is okay.
Yeah.
If it's few and far between, like every Wednesday night, not so great, but it's okay, right? So it absolutely gets to be a situation of where the church is pushing it huge, right? Family centered, uh-huh. church supported. So mm-hmm. family centered this, practice this stuff on your family, practice it with yourself so that you can use it with other folks.
Yeah.
Okay. So as you use this in your home with your family, as you're using this with yourself, then you're going to be more able to use it with your ward members. Mm-hmm. So it's that whole scripture, Luke 22:32, that's when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. So when you understand these concepts and how helpful they have been for you and how helpful they've been in your family, then you can help other people notice them for themselves and in their own families. But until you can do that for you, you're going to do it in the meantime. Like as you're getting better at this, you're still going to use it. It's not like wait until you've mastered it and then start using it with other people.
Yeah.
You're human. It's okay. But it absolutely can be, that's when you're able to show up for other folks in the purest, most authentic space.
Yeah.
So as you're working with other people, as they're in there and you're working on doing this with you, then you don't have to be the expert. Jesus is the expert. Like I hear all the time from Father, because Father has to be really direct with me because that's the way I listen. And I hear all the time like, hey, get out of my way. Let me do what I need to do. Don't try to fix. This isn't yours to fix. Yeah. Step aside. Let me do my thing, right? So you don't need to be the expert. If somebody's coming in and they have their bucket of feelings and they're just blasting them everywhere, you don't have to be an expert on fixing that. It's not, well, you just need to do this and then this and then that. It's just listen, acknowledge that the bucket's there. You consult with them. So another one of my podcast episodes talks about fire hoses and lawnmowers. It's more in a parenting space, but I see it a ton in leadership as well, where it's either this fire hose that blasts you and you feel like a drowned rat, or this lawnmower that's just going to like cut down any resistance that you're ever going to have to deal with. So you just can like fly through your calling, your fly through life or whatever. Your job is to consult. So you're just going to listen. You're just going to consult, and you're going to take Christ's lead on empathy and compassion. So the Bible videos are amazing. I'm a very visual person. So as I'm reading the Bible stories right now with the Come Follow Me curriculum, I'm watching the video with him because it really speaks to me. And one of the most touching videos that I watched, and then I went back, like, I mean, I'm sure that there are people out there that are like, well, I read it and then I go watch it. I've never been the one that like reads the book before I go to the movie. I go to the movie, I'm like, that's awesome. Is that a book? I should read. So as I watch the video, And I see Christ's facial expressions, I'm like, wow, how is that worded, right? Mm-hmm. And so I love the story of when Christ raises Lazarus from the dead, right? So it's in John 11 and it's like 1 through 44. And you're like, that's 44 verses. Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing 44 verses. And as you watch that and listen to that, you see empathy and compassion come together. And as leaders, that's how we get to show up, where he comes in and is comforting and consoling. And initially, it's not like, shh, I'm about to work some magic here. Uh-huh. So calm yourself down. He empathizes. He gets emotional because this hurts him too. And he gets their hurt. So there's a moment of where he's just holding, you know, and empathizing. And then it's like, okay, where is he? Now we're going to do something about that. Now mm-hmm. the compassion is going to come in. So as a bishop, they bring you the bucket. You are not fire hosing them. You're not lawn mowing them. You're just consulting with them. You're not being an expert. What you get to do is you get to say, okay, I'm going to sit with you with this. Even if I just sit here and even if I don't know what to say, I'm not going to pretend like I know what I'm just, that is really, really hard. It's okay to get emotional. You know, there's times where I'm talking with some of my young women's presidents because they're my young women and I get choked up. What they're telling me is hard and I don't have a fix for that because it's Jesus's to fix, but it's hard to hear, right? Yeah. So you empathize. And then if there's something that can be done, then that's where that compassion piece comes in. Sometimes what can be done is just checking in with them or meeting with them again. Sometimes what can be done is, hey, do you feel like a therapist would be really helpful in this space? Like, you know, if the spirit's telling you that that's the direction you need to take. Sometimes it's, hey, can we help cover this or whatever? But that empathy has to happen first. You have to feel with them to know and have the spirit guide you in that compassion piece. Mm-hmm. So that's where it kind of marries over into the bishop's office or into, you know, sitting on that sister's couch and talking with them or visiting with that youth or whatever.
Yeah. And this is such a hopeful message, I feel like, for leaders, especially bishops, because there can be so much pressure that you put on yourself that I need to fix this or read the right scripture or say the right thing.
Yeah.
But when you go into that office with the intent of, I'm just going to feel with them.
Yeah.
Let's pull out your next emotion. Let's feel that emotion together. Yeah. That's empathy, right?
Yeah.
And that's what the Savior did. And that's why we love the Savior so much, because we felt that love from him.
Yeah.
Because he just sat with us in it for a minute. And then he went and showed compassion.
It is the most uncomfortable feeling. Like it is. You're going to think like, that's going to be awesome. And then you're going to sit there and you're going to wait for the puppies and unicorns. And it is just like thorns and pain. Like it is hard. It's a really hard thing to sit with someone in their feeling, but it's real. And it's how Jesus did it. And Jesus wasn't above crying. Jesus wasn't above like, this hurts and this is painful. You know, he absolutely can sit in that because he had a human experience. It's more than, well, he felt everything that I felt in the garden. Like Jesus lived 3 years, 33 plus. Yeah. He lived human life and he felt human feelings and he felt disappointment more than like, just like, oh, this is disappointing that everybody's sinning. Like I'm sure he was let down. There's the human experience he absolutely had. And so it's an incredible way to connect to those that we serve and to those that we love.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Have we covered it all? This has been a good discussion.
I think the only other things that I would add would be, because there's sometimes like I ask myself, okay, what questions would be helpful to ask in those spaces? Mm, yeah. Like I'm not a therapist. I'm not a coach. I am an accountant. So I'm saying this for y'all. So how do I show up in that? Like what kinds of things do I say? And some of the questions I ask are things like, I'm a very visual person. So here this goes. I say like, okay, so where is it bleeding the most? Like, where is it the most hard? What's the toughest stuff, right? Or I say, what's one thing that you think I could do to help? Or what do you need? And a lot of times it's because I get this in my office, right? The first question I ask anybody, I don't care if you're coming from a therapist place, coaching place, whatever, they come, they sit down and I say, what do you need today? And my clients have learned I'm going to ask that question. So they show up most of the time ready, because if they don't, then I dig and then it's way worse than it would be. So they just come with their own needs, right? Yeah. But asking like, okay, what do you need? And 9 times out of 10, they'll come up with something that's not really what they need, but it can give you the steps to get them to where, okay, so they'll be like, well, Bishop, I just need you to pay for this, this, and this, and then it'll be good. And then as you peel it back a little bit, you notice, oh, okay, what they really need is they might need to go to like the self-reliance class, right? So that this can be long-term. And right now, yes, short-term, I can take care of this, but this is what they need long-term. Or they might say, well, because I'll tell a lot of like, you know, people come in, what do you need? I need a new husband. And I'll be like, oh, well, that's a thing. And I'm not giving those out today. So let's figure out what else you need, right? And it can be, okay, so it feels like you need a new husband. What's going on? And then they start to unpack that bucket. And then you can empathize. And then they're walking away, maybe not with a new husband, but with feeling heard. And maybe all they needed was to feel heard. Yeah. So those are some of the questions that can kind of like spark some of that, of coming up with some kind of solution as they walk out. And honestly, we have to be okay with the fact that sometimes they're going to walk out unfixed. Great.
And even frustrated with how the leader responded, even though you tried.
Yep. And that can be okay. As long as it's driven by the spirit, like that's okay. As long as you can say, you know what, that's the way that God needed for it to go and wanted it for it to go. That's an okay person to have be in your corner, right? Yeah. So that's all right. But it can be helpful to kind of connect the dots for you and being able to help them know, okay, this is how we can move forward.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, this has been a fantastic discussion. There's a lot here. Maybe people need to listen a few times, but Where can people find you? And I obviously recommend your podcast. And
yeah. So as a therapist, I'm at brickstherapy.com. So that's B-R-I-C-K-S and then therapy.com. All my information's on there. So you're going to get a lot of information about me, about my fees and all that kind of stuff, how I work with bishops. I work with bishops pretty closely throughout the therapeutic process. And for those who are looking for a coach and not necessarily the therapeutic process, if you come to me as a coach and you need therapy, I'm just going to call it and tell you you need therapy and I'm going
right.
to swap that right quick. But if you come to me from a therapy approach and you need coaching, I'll swap that right quick too. So as a coach, it's just Becky, B-E-C-K-I-E, Hennessy, H-E-N-N-E-S-S-Y.com. And there's a ton of stuff on there. So you can find me there. Like my page, I guess, on Facebook.
that's what
apparently social media is a thing I'm coming to learn. And that's just Becky Hennessy LCSW on Facebook. And then on Instagram, it's Becky.Hennessy.LCSW. You can follow me on there as well.
Awesome. And then lastly, just have you explored this in your own personal life, this ACT model and obviously applying the doctrines and the spiritual practices of prayer and scripture study in that sure. realm? How has that made you a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
I think for me, I have learned a couple things. One, that the atonement of Jesus Christ can apply in every single aspect of life. Any nook, any cranny, it can absolutely apply and it can fix things. Like it can get rid of stuff if you let it. And that's the other thing I've learned is that as I am coming to learn that, these feelings happen and there's things I can do with the feelings, but I don't get to pick how I feel and all those kinds of things. There's an element of trust that's happening within my relationship with God. And I am finding that I'm able to trust Him way more than I've been able to. And as I trust Him more, as I trust His timing, as I don't turn to my own understanding or my own knowledge of, no, if I do this, then I can do this, then I can do this. As I lean into my feelings more, I'm able to lean into stronger, more connected relationship with Him. And that has been pretty awesome.
That concludes my interview with Becky Hennessy. I encourage you to go check out her resource. We'll put all the links in the show notes so you can do so. And hopefully, if there's anything we haven't covered in this realm of coaching, what do we need to consider? What are leaders seeing? Or is it even a thing that leaders need to worry about? But nonetheless, I do know leaders need to contemplate and explore this idea of how to properly show empathy to others, how to address feelings, how to not feel like Mr. Fix-It or Mrs. Fix-It in these roles as a leader so that people can leave not necessarily with their problem fixed, but with so much hope that through Christ, there is a solution. And that there's purpose to these trials and these feelings and this heartache that they may be going through. So definitely check her out and let me know. Go to leadingitsaints.org/contact and let me know what we're missing. What questions could we add to this discussion? And again, text the word LEAD to 474747 and you'll receive a link to our free PDF called 5 Steps in Getting Your Ward Ministering. Until next time, be a leader and not a colleague.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.